The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, haere mai. Welcome along, Hatu is in the house. From my house to your house, whether you're in the dog house, the poor house, the nut house, the murder house, parliament house, or the house of the rising sun, we'll be dealing with some of the important issues of the day, local, regional, national, and international, plus sampling some of the most amazing local talent, and dipping into a few tracks you may or may not have ever heard before. So buckle up and stay tuned for the next half hour, because Hatu is in the fire. Hatu is in the house. Proudly sponsored by Taste of Turkey, Motueka's authentic traditional Turkish kitchen, 92 High Street. And the 2023 Motueka AMP show, Saturday, 2nd December, at the Marchwood Park Showgrounds. Be there, okay?
So I've got Darren Watson on the line here from Wellington.
Thanks. Yeah, no, good to be here.
So you're mostly a blues man, but you've also got some political, satirical ditties that go back as far as a couple of elections ago. Is that right?
Yeah. I released a song in 2014 in the lead up to the election called Planet Key.
So you got this new song. Tell us a little bit about what's inspired this one.
Yeah. Well, I think like a few other people, I'm kind of sadly addicted to watching Parliament TV, and I saw Sam Uffendale get up in the House and give a rather embarrassing speech, which was so entitled and unself-aware and misogynistic and sexist and just completely and utterly out of touch, all in one kind of three-minute speech, really, or 4 minutes, I think it took 5 minutes or something. It was really short, but it was like, and it just, some of the things that he actually said just jumped into my head as the title of the song is Looking Like the Everyday Man, which is something that he actually said, and I thought that was so revealing that he's kind of admitting to acting, putting on his national jacket and going to the supermarket looking like the everyday man. And and I came away and listened back to it, I'm like, my lord, that sounds like Elvis Costello. So I've decided to release it under the name Elvis Costo Living. Just for a bit of a joke on myself, really. And, we'll pop it out and see what happens. Just kind of making my point, as is my want. And it's completely, radically different from anything I've done before, musically speaking. So, it's just a bit of fun, really.
So let's hear a bit of Everyday Man from Elvis Costa Living.
Take the shopping list off my wife and go out there and fill up the trolley. Not only is it an excellent way to get a bit of publicity with a National Party jacket on my back looking like the everyday man, it gives my wife a break and I get to understand what the current prices are.
A kid half to death with a bad leg when I was a young man. School kept it hid with a wink to the bad egg, thanks to my mom and dad. Never had to do a thing to make up for all the things that I probably oughta. I was certainly summa cum laude for sure. But now I'm looking like some stuff to a girl in her bedroom when I was a young man. Never got the blame, just gossip in the common room, cause big ties understand. I can't do what I want when I want to. Consequences off of those not entitled to. Everything I was given the day I was born.
So I have with me Minister Damien O'Connor in the studio today, and he's going to tell us a little bit about what his responsibilities and duties are, and we'll ask a couple of questions that may be on people's minds. So, kia ora, Minister.
Kia ora, Harmony. Great to be here. And so I'm obviously West Coast Tasman MP, and that's been a privilege to represent this amazing region. But I've also been lucky enough to get some ministerial portfolios. And so Minister for Trade and Export Growth, Minister for Agriculture, Minister for Biosecurity, for Lands, and that's a really important one, actually, survey system, looking after high country, and then Associate Minister for Transport. I've just picked that one up. So it's a privilege to work in all of those areas. Big challenges always are, especially in a time of such disruption and challenge. But, you know, I enjoy it and I appreciate the opportunity.
And what do you do in your spare time?
Yeah, not much of that. I try and get home, although it's a bit hard to justify the mortgage. I'm not there a lot. But again, you know, the opportunity to have input, to have some influence and to try and assist, you know, move the country in the right direction is something that you can't turn your back on. You have to grab the opportunity when it's there.
Now, one of the things that's come up in the conversations, let's say, amongst friends and locals and so forth, is things that were related to COVID and the vaccine mandates and all of those kind of things. And there was a lot of, what would I say, grumbling that went on. And can you address some of those issues and maybe give us some kind of explanation why things were done the way that they were?
It was an unbelievable time, and I don't think any one of us would have imagined a time like that when we all stayed at home, where the world shut down. And there were countries that carried on, and you know, places like the US and some other places where actually hundreds of thousands of people died. The thing about COVID is we didn't know what it was going to do to us as individuals, to society, and how it might have evolved as a disease. And so the mutations of it were the things that always worried everyone. And so the more of the disease out in the community, then the more chance of mutations into something that, you know, for many was already fatal, but for others could have become more and more of a threat. So we did what we could. We had, with the best international information that we had, we intervened very quickly. We tried to stop the spread of it. We never said that the development of a vaccine would cure everything, but it would, as we did see, it reduced the impacts on people's health if they did catch COVID. And so I guess the things that we predicted came true. But in the end, it didn't stop, I guess, COVID spreading through the world and killing millions of people, affecting our society, creating some tension, and it was a whole lot of difficulties for individuals, you know, depending on where you worked, what you did, and the health system was different from education, different from the primary sectors, where, for the most part, people carried on with their operations. And of course, those who were dealing with a lot of people, like in the health system, you know, there was a requirement to have the vaccine so that they wouldn't themselves become the super spreaders. So big challenges. We can't turn back the clock. I'm sure there were things that could have been done better, but in the end, you know, we're now looking forward. We're told that we may face these kinds of pandemics in the future. That's a worry. So, you know, just wearing face masks, it wasn't not an uncommon practice in parts of Asia. We never did it. Now it's kind of part and parcel of everyday life. If you've got a cold or a virus or something, then, you know, put on a mask because you won't spread it. So we've learned some good things, even though it's been really, really hard for a lot of Kiwis.
I got to say, I still wear a mask in the supermarket because I figure that's probably the most likely place that I could pick something up. And also, I just remember back to when the Delta wave was hitting the Northern Hemisphere, and particularly the U.S., that two of my friends died during that, and we didn't get it here. And my sister has, far as I know, has long COVID from the beginning, and all of those people were unvaccinated. So
it's a challenge. And, you know, people who were health compromised in some way more likely to be affected, again, from something we didn't know directly how it would impact on individuals. And so you're tough times.
Yeah, well, we can hope that the bulk of it's behind us, but remaining vigilant is probably...
Absolutely. And I think working with one another... Look, I understand there are people who have different opinions on it. And, look, we're just going to work together as a community, accept that there are differences. As I say, the only reason that there were mandates in some areas was to actually stop it spreading to people who have, you know, little or no immunity and who would have otherwise died. So, we prevented the deaths of thousands of people.
And being a cancer survivor myself, I appreciate that very much, you know.
Because I would have been
target audience for a lot of that stuff, so.
Yeah.
The other thing that's come up is, of course, with the election campaign in full swing right now, is the taxation issues and how different parties are dealing with that. So maybe you could give us a little bit of insight in how you see the whole thing.
I mean, taxes are always a very emotive issue, and I guess it's a way that government kind of redistributes wealth and pays for infrastructure. And relative to many other countries, we're a low tax regime. If you look to Europe, places where they have high rates of taxation, they have incredible infrastructure, and in fact their standard of living is generally higher than ours. Now, it's not a simple equation. There are some, of course, parties who are advocating for lower taxes across the board. The question of how you pay for hospitals and pay for schools and roads and all the rest of it, you know, still has to be answered by a number of the parties. I don't think National have answered, you know, how they're going to pay for their program. They need to. Are they going to put up GST? John Key said he would not, but he did. And we have to make sure that parties that say one thing before the election and do another after are held to account. And I can remember that. Maybe people have forgotten. But if they think that hiking GST up another 2.5% is going to pay for all their tax cuts, then, you know, people should know that and make a choice on that basis. But, you know, it doesn't seem to have been part of the discourse and debate at the moment. But other questions around, you know, the sale of land or sale of houses to foreigners, National and ACT have said that they would open the door to that. I think shutting that door has meant that prices for houses have gone up far less than they would have otherwise. And we're building a whole lot more to you know, bring some supply into the market. The one of capital gains tax, and I've spoken to many people saying, why don't you put it in place? And, you know, I think long term there needs to be one to ensure that people don't just pay tax on their labour and efforts, they pay it on their gains through capital appreciation. And I guess when you do that is the critical thing. And there was debate around whether that would have further affected the value of properties, the affordability of homes, and we've chosen at this stage not to bring it in. I know a lot of people think, well, you should have, along with the wealth tax. You know, it was a hard call to make, I think, by leadership, and over time, I think that might be reviewed. In the meantime, you know, we're not planning to cut taxes because we need money for infrastructure, for healthcare, as I've said before.
Raising the age of superannuation from 65 to 67, so maybe you could comment about that.
We're not planning to raise that at all, and it's kind of pretty easy if you're sitting in an office and you know, you just work another couple of years, and many people are choosing to do that. And in fact, the demand is for people who, you know, have the experience to carry on working beyond superannuation. A lot of people across our economy who, you know, do manual work or in the trades area, you know, many of them are worn out by the time they get to 65, and they don't want to have to be forced to work another 2 years. And it is affordable. We've invested money, the previous Labor government under Helen Clark, we invested money up front to make sure that the bulge that will occur of people you're my age, you know, who go into superannuation, there'll be fewer people working, but that we've got a big fund, the superannuation fund now, that can help kind of pay for what we need and to continue to secure superannuation income for people in retirement, but not force those to work, you know, longer. Now, it may be a discussion, there's certainly been talk of, you know, over you know, 10 or 20 year period, moving that age up. But you know, at this stage, we're not planning to do that. I know some other parties are.
And the other issue being climate change, and of course, you know, being agriculture minister, you're right in the middle of the debate regarding methane and ruminant animals and so forth. So where are we at about that?
Well, we made announcements about 3 weeks ago that let's wind it back a bit to when we came in under Helen Clark, and we proposed a carbon tax, which would have been money that reinvested back into new technologies, and that was opposed. The fart tax, they called it then, and so farmers said we didn't want to be part of that. And so the ETS was brought in, and that brought in all the economy except for agriculture and the methane emissions and nitrous oxide and carbon dioxide from agriculture, which is about 48% of our total emissions. That was left to one side, and everyone else who buys petrol or diesel or electricity that isn't renewable will be paying an amount of money into the ETS. And we've now got to the point where in 1997, the national government committed agriculture to playing its part. And we've been, as I say, debating it for a long time. So we've now got to the point where we want to include agriculture in a system that puts a price on methane. That money will be generated to reinvest back into research and development, and then to assist farmers to take up some of that technology. There are some technologies here now. They're not necessarily economically viable, but if farmers put it in place, it would start to reduce or further reduce our emissions from agriculture. And that's what we need to do, because across the globe, everywhere I've travelled to, people are concerned about climate change, about global warming. They want us to do everything we can to reduce our emissions. That includes the food production systems. And while we are reasonably efficient now, that doesn't mean to say we shouldn't try harder. And that's what we're trying to do. The money that we get, and we've put up a proposal that will oblige farmers to have a measure of their on-farm emissions by next year, end of next year, and then we'll bring in a pricing on that as low as possible, but it will be enough money to pay for R&D and to incentivize and to pay for some of the technologies that we discover, hopefully, over the next few years. So it's not money back into the central government coffers, it's money back into agriculture so that we can further reduce our emissions from what are efficient food production systems, but they have to keep improving.
The other thing I was thinking about is, what do we do to identify and combat misinformation? You got any ideas on those?
Oh, that's a big one, and I know that actually our former Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is now has an international role in working with Google and the big agencies, the big multinationals who are at the forefront of that misinformation management. The information flows through social media quite often. It flows into the big juggernauts that basically control the internet, a lot of what we do, to make sure that if it is really nasty and destructive misinformation, then there should be some filter on that. You know, I support freedom of expression, and that's fine, but we can't have people just driving misinformation campaigns that lead to disharmony, to disunity, and to the kind of chaos that we have seen around the world. That is simply not acceptable. We want happy and healthy and robust debate. We don't want disunity across our civil society.
Well, I think happy and healthy and robust is a good place to leave this interview. Thank you very much, Minister Damien O'Connor, and good luck with the campaign. As you know, I'm probably on Team Labour right now, so I'll identify myself in that respect. And
Well, thanks, Harmony, and I really appreciate, people thinking and discussing, not arguing, but discussing and debating politics and political themes, really, really important part of New Zealand society. But Fresh FM is a wonderful forum for people to do that, and so I look forward to hopefully a fair campaign, not one that dives into the depths of individual kind of accusations and misinformation. But anyway, I'll always be optimistic, and thank you for your efforts.
So there it is, our show for this week. And a big thank you and shout out to our guests, our wonderful sponsors, Taste of Turkey, Mutawaika's traditional Turkish kitchen at 92 High Street in the best wee town here in the Nelson Tasman region, and the Mutawaika AMP show Saturday, 2nd of December, 2023 at our own Marchwood Park. And of course to you, the audience here at Fresh FM, 104.8 FM in Nelson Tasman, 107.2 FM in the Nelson CBD, 95.0 FM in Eastern Golden Bay, and 88.9 FM in Marlboro. These shows repeat the following week of broadcast and can also be found by going to freshfm.net and search Hatu in the House, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, or iHeartRadio. Takite ano.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.